all things point to me. I was introduced to Science of Mind in May of 2000, so my anniversary is coming up pretty soon. But and I was introduced because of an ongoing wanting to know where I was at the time. I just felt just such an unrest with who I was, and for some reason I knew there was more. And so coming to Science of Mind was like, this really, really feels like home for me. And so I decided to do the foundations class, and from there I realized that in order to make my life what it is, in order to direct my life, the spiritual mind treatment was one of the easiest way that I could harness to make it work for me. And I was thinking about how did I know God from back then? How did I unify with God? And you know, I hear about God is all there is, and God is substance, and the one mind, and the source of all things is the originating power of everything that came into being. And how did I recognize and understand this and unified with it? Well, back then I did the only thing I knew best, which was to unify with the air we breathe, the breath, the oxygen. And that felt really good at the time. But then it started, my unrest started again, and it's like, well, the walls don't breathe, and the stones don't breathe, and you know, the inanimate objects. And it's, how can I be at one with these things? And so I came to the next theory, which I obviously knew, you know, in high school, you know, the ionic, the molecular, the atomic theory, and that felt really good. That felt really, really good. And it took me through those 4 years, going to be 5 years soon, in knowing that there was this oneness, this underlying power, however I wanted to look at it, the ionic, the chemistry theory really worked for me. But that changed like 2 weeks ago. I was doing practitioner duties here, and I was in the middle of prayer. And all of a sudden, I was struck. I couldn't say another word, because something just came to me. And the word that came to me very, very loudly was recognition. And I'm like, okay, Spirit, I have something to do here. I'm saying a prayer, sort of. Can you have the time for him? I can't think of a word right now. But I couldn't go on. I couldn't go on. And I just had to really recognize that word, recognition. So during the sharing, I was so honored to have David all to myself in the group. And I said, David, what does cognition mean? I knew it, but I wanted a feedback from him. And he said, you know, knowing, knowledge. And I said, so recognition is re-knowing. And it struck me. And I couldn't feel comfortable, so I had to go to the dictionary. During the week, it was like just hitting me all the time. It's like recognition. I couldn't even say the word recognition the way I normally would have said it. And then I chose the collegiate dictionary, because I know Webster was very partial to me. He's a metaphysician, you know. So he would give me the words that I want to see. So I had to ask the big scholars, what does cognition mean? And they shared with me, they said that it's the mental process of knowing. The mental process of knowing, including aspects such as awareness, perception, reasoning, and intuition. It is a knowing. So I asked them again, what does recognition mean? They said, it's the awareness that something perceived has been perceived before. Something perceived has been perceived before. And no wonder I had to get that before I got to this next stage of my treatment while I was doing the treatment last two Sundays. Because I had to know to myself that I know. Spirit opened me up and said, you already know, you just need to re-know that I am. What God is, I already know that I am. And that felt comfortable. That's where I am. So I've used all these steps, and all these steps are great. They are great to, they have brought me from where I was to where I am now. But I find that using and knowing that intuitive process of just knowing that I know, that I already know, I remember. So when I say words like that God is the creative process, and this God is the force of the universe, it's the cosmic mind, it's like it's nothing new. It's just like a remembering that I am what God is. And so it's like my hat off to intuition, which is that spiritual aspect of me, is I am allowing that to guide me into all truths, into the truth of really who I am, which is spirit, which is pure source. And the other thing is that I know that I can't access it from outside. It has to be accessed from within. You know, Ernest Holmes had mentioned about Jesus, where he said that, you know, going page 75. Jesus said, reality is not in the mountain, nor is it afar off, but it is within us. And so, even if I see all these beautiful things outside, it is important to know that because I can recognize beauty within me, I can recognize it from the outside. It's like seeing and the seer. It's all one. It's just the one fullness that God is. And so I just wanted to leave with you that the way I unify is just to know that the perception, the perceiver has always been there. The oneness, the intuition that I am has always been there, and it's just a remembering. It's a re-knowing. And for those of us who just sometimes don't get it and just know that I still don't get the unification process, just let go. Just be still, as David read. Just be still and know that God is God. And something just came to me that, you know, the skin protects the entire body. But the body doesn't always recognize the skin as that overall protector. And the skin doesn't complain. The skin continues to protect the body regardless. It is helpful if we understand and recognize that the skin is there so we can lotion it and if we can take care of it, and it takes better care of us. But just know that you are protected, you are covered, you are surrounded by total well-being, and that God is God in your life. Thank you.
Well, that was you'd think sometimes that we actually get together and plan these things and plan segues, but it's just perfect. You know, it's beautiful. The truth is self-revealing, and I have to. It's good to start there, because once I get into this, where I'm going with, you go wonder where is he going with this and what's he talking about. But so I'll start with the conclusion, which she begins with. It's a self-revealing truth. It's there. It was in the music this morning, and it was, that was just, you know, the perfect thought process, and in the reading. And of course, the reason I love Holmes so much is because he says it so well. You know, there are others that say it well too, but I thought a lot about the path that I took almost 40 years ago. Now I was actually considering becoming a minister, and I started in school, started studying theology. It didn't last very long because in the study itself, I realized I wasn't a believer, so I did. I thought through some of the path there, and I was thinking about the arguments for the classic arguments for the existence of God. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on these because I want you to go to sleep. But there are three classic arguments: the teleological, the ontological, and the cosmological. The teleological arguments just say the universe has design and purpose. So then the conclusion is there's a designer and a planner. Now, and then the ontological arguments are just deduced from reason alone. And because we go through, and that you can spend several steps to get to this, but the conclusion of it is that there's ultimately a being that's greater than all others. Then the cosmological arguments argue from causality. Something has to be causing all this. The result of the classic arguments is always comes up as an other thing. So, and anybody who uses that approach comes up with a different other. I mean, you know, even within same denominations, they continue to divide that separate other and provide him with separate aspects. And Kant, if anybody's into philosophy, sort of tossed all of those out the window and says that the real argument for God is right and wrong. It's moral. And there has, because there is issue of right and wrong, there has to be somebody who's deciding that. There goes God. You know, still doesn't do it. You know, it still comes up with another thing, a judge, whatever. Am I talking too fast? You know, my wife told me last night when I was kind of reviewing what I was going to say, she says, so what do you think? Got any advice? And she says, one, don't talk too fast. And two, don't say anything X-rated. So I put my glasses on. That always slows me down. You put them on, you have to use them. So they all look external. Last week we were in Las Vegas most of the week, in the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and we came back on Monday from visiting Grace's sister and brother-in-law. Real relaxing time for us. But my brother-in-law has a PhD in water or something. I don't know where that goes, but he's an engineer and a scientist, and I always enjoy discussions with him. And he's always, you know, prided himself in his atheism. The last few years, he's really started to meditate a lot and think a lot, but he still doesn't want to study anything that's theological. He ran from that many, many years ago, and still isn't there, but he saw what to believe. And it was kind of in concert with where he's been going with his meditation and thinking. And basically, he's concluded that everything is one. And so I said, well, Larry, what kind of atheist are you? He said, well, maybe I'm not a very good one. And I said, well, a lot of people would consider me an atheist too, and I'd say pretty much the same thing that you're saying right now, but you know, I don't that's not the conclusion that I get to with it. And so we had a couple of discussions, and one of the things that came up were some of the back into the religious training again. I think I mentioned what he's come, the bottom line on his conclusion is sort of an undifferentiated unity. He hasn't He hasn't started reading New Thought material to any extent, but he's coming to those conclusions, and that's why he liked What the Bleep, because it supported his meditative processes. So he was very excited about it. And we were looking forward to going and telling him about What the Bleep, and you know, he was telling us we didn't get a chance to do that. So, but he's on the way. So I think I mentioned sometime one of these terms about in theology that you have to be sympathetic with our ministers. They all go through all this stuff, taking simple truths that are self-revealing and hanging big handles all over them. I guess anything does that, but if you're going to study something, you have to put big names on it. One of the terms that I mentioned was the homoousia, which is a theological term that was a big debate at the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century when doing that creed, you know, that everybody says. And it's basically an argument about, there were two words, homoousia and homoousia. The only difference is an iota in the word. You know, the iota, the smallest letter in the Greek alphabet, and you say, I don't care one iota. You've heard that. Well, that's just because it's the smallest letter in the Greek alphabet. And that's the only difference in the two words. But it's a profound difference in the meaning. When they refer to the homoousia, they're talking about the Godhead, God the Father, Jesus, and the Spirit, all being equal, one unified body. But homoousia is... it's sort of a rank structure. It's that undifferentiated unity. There's a rank structure. There's God the Father, and there's the Holy Spirit. They represent one in purpose and substance, but it's not one in equality. So, you know, thinking about these two, to me, ultimately, the Council of Nicaea decided on the true unity thing. Well, think about, and there's another term called the hypostatic union. I don't think I mentioned that one, but it's probably a good thing. That's how Christ could be God and man at the same time. You know, it's not quite as convoluted as how many angels can stand on the head of a pin, or nearly as excited. But you know what? You think about it. I mean, that's what we are. See, so it works for me. Both of these arguments work in ultimate, the studying of unity. They really do work. It's just that in the traditional approach, they focus too much and lead to an otherness. And the sweetness of it is that the truth is self-revealing. You know, these things are interesting to discuss, and they were interesting in my path. But for me, in the study... they made no sense. They just, you know, it's, where are we going with this? Proofs aren't really proofs. Maybe they're evidences, maybe they're hints. Now every single one of them makes sense. Every single one of them. When you see what the truth is that speaks to your own heart when it's open and you allow it to reveal itself, every one of these arguments work. I mean, the teleological, the ontological, the cosmological, all of those make sense within the framework of one mind. So, I was listening to Gail's conclusion there at the end of hers, and I said, it's exactly the same mind. The truth reveals. I Am just spoke so beautifully during the course of music. I Am one. Mm-hmm.
All yours. I'm going to wrap it up here with a little bit of home. If the goal of religious science is to know and use the power that's available to us all the time, then I always figure then what's true for one moment in time must be true for all moments in time. So in other words, if I'm one with God sitting right here in this room, then it's also true when I'm brushing my teeth, working on my taxes,
yelling at my son. Or any moment in time, there's not a moment when I am not one with God. And that gets to be a stretch sometimes, especially if I'm not aware of it, even if it exists and I'm not aware. It always helps to me to have some visuals to hang my mind on, because I can forget and I can feel really out of it and kind of disorganized. But the things that bring it back to me sometimes are the moments when I can connect with a visual that says it all for me. And one of my favorite books of Holmes is Living the Science of Mind, which everybody gets in Foundations class. And in it, he has this wonderful chapter about Solomon's temple. And he talks about the temple having two pillars on either side. He has names for them that I couldn't pronounce if I tried. And it says that to enter the Holy of Holies, you have to pass through those two pillars. And then he says that the temple itself represents ourself. There's a high priest that meets everybody who enters the temple and then brings them into the Holy of Holies. And within there is the Ark of the Covenant. He says that the Ark is a vehicle containing the life principle, and the covenant is the eternal laws of God, or law of God. And in the Ark is a scroll of life which contains the name of God, I Am. So this is a tremendous visual of a journey inside some pillars, being greeted by a priest, walking over to perhaps this box, and there's a scroll on it, and it is, and within it is the word I Am. And so you can imagine yourself going from the broader perspective of our everyday life to the very finite truth of which I am within. We can reach that awareness by meditation, by going to classes and studying. We can get it passively. We can pursue it aggressively by, perhaps focusing on images like this. And so it all comes down to the self-revealing truth, the I Am within, that exists at all moments. You get that picture? You get the picture inside? Just thinking about it makes me feel, it's like an instant on switch for me. To think about going to the door, being greeted, walking over to an altar perhaps, opening the box and seeing the words, I Am, which say it all. So what I wanted to do was close with a little bit of Holmes. He has some beautiful meditations in this book. So what I want you to do is close your eyes and experience this with me. Because I am one with God, I am one with all people. Because I am one with life, I am one with everything that lives. I feel my union with people and with nature. I feel that I belong to life. I love life and I enter into the joy of living. I enter into companionship with others, into cooperation with them. And I know that something within me reaches out and embraces the whole world. Something within me blesses everything it touches. It brings life and happiness and joy to everyone. Something in me acts as a healing balm, restoring everything to its natural and native perfection. As I silently listen to the spirit within me and think of its perfection, I know that I'm being born again, born into joy and hope and gladness, born into love and faith and assurance. Silently, I release every negative thought from my mind. I loose it and let it go. And I too pray that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us. And so it is. Thank you.